Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Charlie Goldsmith, and it is Chiefs week. It feels like all season long, this has been a game scheduled, circled, starred that everyone has been looking forward to before you even really knew what the Bengals were going to be because of the quarterbacks playing in this game with both Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes playing at a high level. There is so much to talk about in this game in terms of star power that's going to be on the field at Paul Brown Stadium. But Charlie, let's start this podcast by talking about things we're most intrigued about seeing on Sunday when this game kicks off.
I'm going to start with Joe Burrow, who has elevated his game and solidified top 10 status over the last couple weeks. The superpower that he has kind of weaponized is kind of twofold. One, his ability to read a blitz. Like, think of all the times where the Ravens slot blitzed Jamar Chase or slot blitzed with the cornerback guarding Jamar Chase, and Burrow just checked down to a wide open Jamar Chase for explosive yards after catch. That combined with when you don't blitz Burrow, his ability and his creativity and his accuracy outside the pocket. Burrow has kind of perfected those two things. The result has been an elevated stretch of play from Burrow, and now heading into the most important stretch of the season, Burrow is playing the best football of his NFL career.
Yeah, obviously you start with Joe Burrow, right? And as everybody's seen over the last couple of weeks, he's been must-see TV. But I'm really looking forward to seeing. There's a lot of questions about how good is this Bengals team really? Because when you look at some of their wins, they have some wins against some really not good teams. And even though they beat the Ravens last week, it is worth noting who they were playing because that's not the same Ravens team that you'd see on a normal week when healthy. If Joe Burrow were to put up 525 against Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey as the starting quarterbacks, then we have a different conversation. But I think it is worth bringing up, not trying to take anything away from what he did, but let's call it how it is. That wasn't the same Ravens team we're accustomed to seeing. The Chiefs are the measuring stick in the AFC, and everybody knows it, and all the players have said as much this year. And if you really want to see kind of where you're at and how close you might be to the AFC's top team, you get to see it against the Chiefs. Because if the Bengals are to go out there and face plant and look terrible against the Chiefs, which I don't think they will, but say they do, are you back to saying, what is this Bengals team? Or do you chalk it up to, I think a lot of people are surprised at just how well the Bengals have played this year. So you're hoping in a couple years, you're not quite expecting the Bengals to be the Chiefs yet. I just think like that's the main thing I'm looking forward to seeing, because I want to see how good this Bengals team really is. And I think the Chiefs are the litmus test to find out that.
Yeah, to me, it's only two things that matters, or really one thing that matters. Do the Bengals make the playoffs or do they not? I think that this season has come to the boiling point where, with the way they convincingly beat Baltimore twice and Pittsburgh twice, that readjusted expectations for a team that I predicted to win seven games at the start of the season. We're at the point now where success is solely determined, I think, on whether or not they make the playoffs. This Chiefs game, I just view as one of two win and in opportunities they have more than anything else. I do think a win would, you know, narrative-wise, cement the Bengals as real contenders in the AFC. But again, ultimately, that's not the bar I'm measuring them up against anyway. I'm just judging whether or not they make the playoffs. That would be a huge, unexpected, to be honest, step from where the Bengals were even in August. And that's what's at stake. Living up to the readjusted expectations we set at the end of October, and whether or not the Bengals can make it to the postseason, that'll take either a win this week or a win next week.
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. I'm more so bringing it up is because based off of the skill positions the Bengals have, they're so easily comparable to the Chiefs. I mean, you even heard some reporters asking that this week, you know, do you think you guys are basically the second coming of the Chiefs? And I think that at the end of the day, before you can say that, the Bengals have to clinch a playoff spot. So you're right on with saying that. So let's talk about what we think the Chiefs defense, who has been playing very well recently, to start the season, everybody, when the Chiefs were 3-4, everyone was saying, are the Chiefs broken? What's wrong with their defense? They had one of the worst defenses in the NFL in the first month of the season. They've started taking the ball away. They're getting healthy on defense. They've been playing great. What do you think the Chiefs defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, is going to try and do against this Bengals offense, knowing he faces a similar type of offense in a ton of skill players that are really good every day in practice?
Yeah, I see two things. The first is how much the Chiefs front has improved, the front four in particular. The Melvin Ingram trade just did so much. It kind of clicked everyone into the right place by adding that explosive edge rusher, which they were lacking. And for a Chiefs style of defense, that was something they just sorely needed and weren't getting over the first half of the season. Following that trade, I think that front has established themselves as a very strong group, exactly the kind of group that's given the Bengals struggles this season. Look at what the 49ers did. Look at what the Broncos did. Look at what the Bears did. Look at what even the Vikings did for a lot of that game. It's exactly the kind of group that has frustrated the Bengals. And the reason to be concerned about that matchup is because how they can create pressure with the guys they have up front without blitzing. And then on the back end, I mean, the Chiefs are one of the best turnover creating teams in football. A lot of that starts with Tyrann Mathieu, and the Bengals view the secondary as one without a guy they can quote unquote pick on. So those are the two areas to be concerned. Those are kind of how the Chiefs have turned it around, improving their front four and creating turnovers. And that kind of feeds into some of the Bengals' weaknesses. So as you were saying, though, it's right. The Bengals are going to need to elevate their game in those two areas because those are the two things the Chiefs' defense is doing really well.
Yeah, let's talk about the Chiefs' defense a little bit more, because I looked up the stats yesterday, and I'll never forget this comment from an offensive coordinator that I used to cover last year. He said, Chris Jones, the Chiefs' star defensive tackle, is way better than he gets credit for. He has 7 sacks. He had 7.5 in total last year. And so he still has 2 more games. So he'll likely beat what he had last year. He is very, very good. Like, not Aaron Donald, but right there in terms of that type of play that you're going to get from him. And as you just said, Charlie, the Bengals have struggled when they face an interior guy who can rush like Chris Jones, and he's just a bully up front. He makes his presence known. He's one of the top players at his position. But like you said, Melvin Ingram was a big add for them. Tyrann Mathieu in the back end. But they've been getting better play out of their linebackers, which has also helped elevate their play. Do you think that there is one position that you think the Bengals can expose the Chiefs at in terms of Bengals offense versus the Chiefs defense?
I mean, you would probably have to say outside corner. You saw teams being really productive against the Chiefs in the pass game when the Chiefs weren't creating turnovers because, you know, the Chiefs secondary probably isn't top 5, top 10, top 12. It's not in that range. That's the Bengals' recipe in general. I mean, this is going to be one of those classic games where how do the Chiefs want to, you know, what do the Chiefs dare the Bengals to do? Is this a game where they try to take Mixon away, a game they try to take Chase away, a game they try to take Higgins away? We're at that point where the Bengals just have to react to whichever player the opposing defensive coordinator is most set on taking away and make those mid-game adjustments, because the Chiefs are solid up front and then average plus Mathieu in the back end. It'll be the kind of game where it's just going to be about making that in-game adjustment to, you know, be prepared for how the Chiefs defense is playing them.
Yeah, Joe Burrow said it. The Bengals know that they're going to need to score points. So a sleepy first half for the Bengals just isn't going to do it. But fortunately, they have looked like they've corrected that over the last couple of games. So that's reassuring from that standpoint. But then now let's talk about the other side of the ball. And this is where I have more of my concerns about this matchup. And I think it's something we should spend a little bit of time talking about because it really hasn't been discussed. The Bengals' pass defense is one of the worst pass defenses statistically in the NFL. They've been able to get by because of who they've played and how good the offense has been recently. But when they have faced a quarterback who can throw it and throw it wherever he wants, like Justin Herbert, Aaron Rodgers, they let up a lot of yards. And I think this is Patrick Mahomes with a healthy Travis Kelce, who's going to be back this week, and Tyreek Hill. I'm a little concerned about what the Bengals secondary will do, because before last week, they ranked number 29 against the pass.
I'm trying to consider that statement. Like, the Bengals have clearly struggled against tight ends. That's something we can talk more about. I think that they allowed deep balls. They allowed the 2 deep receptions to Justin Herbert, which were bad. They allowed the 2 big plays to Devontae Adams, which were bad. I think Lamar Jackson had a deep ball. Baker Mayfield had that 60-yard pass. But it seems like there hasn't been a trend. You know, it's, you know, I think that Chidobe Awuzie and Eli Apple are having standout seasons. I think that while Jesse Bates hasn't been the turnover creator that the Bengals need him to be, I think he's only gotten beat, you know, once by Justin Herbert and then maybe one other time all season. I don't see a secondary that's getting beat consistently in one place at the back end of the field. It's mostly exclusively happening against tight ends on early downs recently. I pulled up the stat the other day. It's like on first and second downs over the last three games, it's like 20 catches for 242 yards against tight ends in particular. That's the biggest area that the pass defense is struggling with right now. And of course, that is a problem that has to be addressed when you're going up against Patrick Mahomes with Travis Kelce and one of the best connections in the league.
Travis Kelce's, in my opinion, even better than Mark Andrews and George Kittle in terms of catching the ball, obviously. So the good thing is the Bengals look like they could get Logan Wilson back this weekend. And let's talk about that, because he has missed the last couple of games and the Bengals are dealing with a little bit of a shakeup at the linebacker position, because Akeem Davis-Gaither has been out for a while now. Jermaine Pratt was put on the COVID reserve list yesterday, and we're unsure. Zach Taylor said it's a little bit of a crapshoot based off of the new protocols, with it only being 5 days if you're asymptomatic. But it doesn't. I'm sure Lou Anarumo has a plan for if Pratt can play and if he can't play. And Logan Wilson practiced yesterday. He was a full participant, which was very interesting to see, because Zach Taylor kind of downplayed it when we talked to him and said he's going to practice a little. So for him to be a full participant is a big deal. That definitely helps with Travis Kelce, but it's going to be all hands on deck when trying to stop Travis Kelce in the type of plays he's capable of making, specifically with Von Bell, who said it's all going to be about technique when going up against a player like Travis Kelce. Then we've talked about Travis Kelce and the Bengals' struggles against tight ends this year. Let's talk about Tyreek Hill, because Brian Callahan said something I thought was noteworthy this week. He was asked about Patrick Mahomes, and he said someone who covers the Chiefs and coached the Chiefs, I don't remember which one it was, but he said, for as good as you think Patrick Mahomes is, Tyreek Hill is an even better wide receiver. And when he said that, I was like, huh, that's interesting. Obviously, Tyreek Hill is known for his explosive play ability and the way he can take a top off a defense. But that matchup, obviously, Chidobe Awuzie will get the nod there. I'll be interested to see if he travels with him. But Tyreek Hill creates problems of his own.
So I do think when you're looking at Chidobe Awuzie, who's having a standout season, I do think that these speed receivers have actually been his best matchups. Mm-hmm. And they've been a matchup, too, where the Bengals have trusted Awuzie and used Awuzie to follow that player more than, say, a physical Keenan Allen type. Like, look at what Awuzie did against Deebo Samuel, against Khalif Raymond, against Hollywood Brown and Deontay Johnson. Six really good games right there that he played, mostly following those speed-first wide receivers. I think that's, again, the stylistic matchup that he has performed the best against. And again, Hill's one of the best receivers in the NFL. Obviously, it's kind of like the tight end question. You look at what they've done previously and fully acknowledge the fact that the Bengals haven't quite faced someone as good as who they're about to face this week with the speed option or the speed element of Tyreek Hill. It'll be the toughest element in that area Chidobe Awuzie has faced. But I do think, compared to any other style of wide receiver, it's been the type of receiver that Awuzie has been the best against this season.
Well, that's certainly promising. I think this game is going to come down to, as we continue to talk about the defense, turnovers. If the Bengals can generate a turnover on Patrick Mahomes, who has been susceptible of turning the ball over this year, I think that would be the only way they're able to kind of keep pace with the Chiefs. Let's talk about Patrick Mahomes, because we can't talk about the Chiefs offense without getting into the matchup with the Bengals defense against Patrick Mahomes. What are you seeing is the biggest trend of how opposing defenses have tried to shut down Patrick Mahomes?
Well, it's funny. Like, there was a point where it was like, oh, you just got to play too high against Patrick Mahomes and everything will be fine. And then during this stretch, even though teams have still been playing a lot of too high against Mahomes, he's still playing really well. And I think a huge part of that has been the speed in particular they have at receiver. But I think the most underrated element of the Chiefs offense is their offensive line. Mm-hmm. They have Joe Tooney, a name you all know. They have Orlando Brown, one of the best offseason trades you saw. But the two people I want to give credit to really are rookie Creed Humphrey and rookie mm-hmm. Trey Smith. So much of Mahomes' ability is what he can do in unscheduled plays, what he can do outside the pocket, and what he can do when he has time. He's not a, you know, the whole thing with Mahomes is he's struggled when he has not let the game dictate his throws. He has struggled when he hasn't been patient and kind of gets too eager in forcing opportunities. He's at his best when he has the opportunity to freelance, and that takes a great offensive line. And I think in particular what rookie Creed Humphrey and rookie Trey Smith have done is what doesn't get enough credit in the Chiefs offense. Creed Humphrey was kind of a third, fourth round projection at center out of Oklahoma. Trey Smith was a guy I really liked to guard out of Tennessee, had all the tools, but had so many health issues that he was a real wild card and ended up being a late round pick. And I think Humphrey's the second highest graded center of PFF, and Smith is top 15 of all the guards in the NFL. The fact that the Chiefs took one pick at the end of the second round and then one late round draft pick and turned those into two very good offensive linemen, you know how hard that is, Bengals fans. Like, look at what the Bengals are getting out of people taken in comparable spots in Jackson Carmen and Trey Hill. The fact that the Chiefs were able to get so much out of those two picks, I think, is the element that's kind of helped unlock the Chiefs' offense in the second half of the season. And they don't get enough credit for that. It's really impressive.
Yeah, and everybody was ready to write the Chiefs off. But after they lost to the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl, Andy Reid and the Chiefs' general manager, Brett Veach, literally made it so obvious that they were going to do anything they could to figure out the offensive line and make it better for Patrick Mahomes, because they clearly see when he has time, like you said, his ability to make off-schedule plays is the best in the NFL. Speaking of Burrow and Mahomes, I just wanted to talk about one more thing about this matchup. I asked Joe Burrow a couple weeks ago about legacies, and basically quarterbacks are – their legacy is determined in the NFL by how they play in the postseason and Super Bowl wins, playoff. There's been some really good quarterbacks that just don't get talked about as they should because they're on not teams that don't win or teams that don't make the playoffs. This is a matchup where I think that Burrow, he'll never say it, but I think he really thrives in matchups like this where he can go, he has the opportunity to go toe-to-toe with a quarterback that is deemed one of the best in the NFL. I think you'll see the most out of Burrow. Obviously, he's trying to help his team clinch a playoff spot for the first time in years. That's the most important thing. But just deep down, I feel like he really thrives in opportunities like this where he can go up against the former league MVP and two-time AFC champion quarterback.
So this is a week where, it's such an interesting point in time for Burrow. I spent a lot of time this week going back to my pre-draft evaluation and other pre-draft evaluations, and then what the coaching staff said about their pre-draft evaluations with Burrow. And from the coaching staff in particular, they've spoken about how Burrow's hyper-competitiveness was one of his standout traits. And that's so interesting to me, because usually I don't put a lot of credibility into like narrative-driven traits like that, but the hyper competitive, the fact that the Bengals coaching staff believed so strongly in Burrow's competitiveness and his ability on the big stage, and the fact that was something they tangibly scouted and that they tangibly kind of emphasized in the scouting process is really interesting to consider in this game, a win and in game for the playoff. They believe that the best way to have confidence that you're going to win in these kind of situations are having done it in the past. And a huge reason that they drafted Burrow was what he did in mirror situations at LSU. So now is such a great moment to revisit that characterization of Burrow's game from before he had played an NFL snap. The Bengals, a huge reason in them going with Burrow was his competitiveness and the ability he has on the big stage. Here you go. And here's a really interesting moment in time to see how that pans out.
Yeah, for football fans, even if you're not a Bengals fan, but we obviously know our listeners are Bengals fans, this is a fun matchup to watch. It's the top top matchup of the AFC this week. The Tony Romo, Jim Nance, Tracy Wolfson crew will be here in Cincinnati. It's going to be a fun weekend. And before we head out, Charlie, let's talk quickly about what's really changed for this offense. And I feel like we'd be remiss if we did not mention the evolution and the improved play of T. Higgins over the last couple of weeks, because he has been Burrow's guy. It's hard to imagine a couple of these wins taking place for the Bengals if T. Higgins wasn't making some of the catches he is.
Yeah, my favorite throw of the season from Burrow was 3rd-and-16 at the end of the second half last week, where 90% of teams would have checked it down in that situation or done a halfback draw and gone into halftime. A lot of quarterbacks would have thrown it away when they didn't see favorable coverage in that spot. You're already up. You're already in control of the game. But what does Burrow do on 3rd-and-16? He drops back, throws it up to T. Higgins in double coverage, and Higgins makes his best catch of his career. Higgins remade his body over the offseason, really learned tangible lessons about catching the ball after dealing with drops last season, and about the physicality of the NFL. He applied that tangibly in really specific ways. He really cleaned up the little things too. Look at the tackle he made against the Raiders. Look at his productivity in the run game. They're having him line up as a tight end sometimes. Look out for that. They kind of use him in that Auden Tate role now from time to time because of his size. Higgins is doing all of the little things at a really high level. Those setup moments like 3rd-and-16 against the Ravens, the Bengals have that much confidence in Higgins right now.
Mm-hmm. And I just felt like we needed to talk about that, because I think it's, as I mentioned, a huge reason why the Bengals are sitting in the position they are in. So speaking of that position, as you mentioned, Charlie, Bengals beat the Chiefs, clinch a playoff spot. Then you don't have to worry about, you start talking about, okay, do the Bengals play Burrow the following week in Cleveland? Do they play the starters? If they don't beat the Chiefs, then the Week 18 matchup in Cleveland is all hands on deck, because if they lose these last two games, basically a lot of factors have to happen for them to make the postseason still. When you look at these next two games, do you think it's this weekend or next weekend that the Bengals clinch the postseason, or do you think they don't and they miss out on the playoffs?
So Putting on an analyst hat, I think they'll lose this week, and I think they'll win next week in a win-or-go-home scenario and make the playoffs. To be honest, though, I don't think the right thing to do is to look at it as a two-game sample size. I do think the right thing is to look at it as a one-game sample size. Like, this is what you've built for, a team that has Burrow. We talked about his competitiveness on the big stage that I mentioned, and adding the veterans you did with playoff experience like the Bengals have. I think that you do that for games like this in particular. I think that the approach and the sense of the approach that you get for this game is all about this week. And it's the kind of opportunity where who you are in games like this is equivalent to who you are over a 17-game sample. The style of play and the players they rely on will show you who the Bengals have the most confidence in the biggest moments. Like, this is why you do it for games like this. We're going to learn more about the Bengals this week than we've learned in any other game this season. And to have an opportunity like that, and probably the most meaningful game, or in one of the most meaningful games in regular season history at Paul Brown Stadium, there are some candidates in 05 and 14 that kind of come close. All of that sets up for exactly the kind of matchup that you would want to see a young team like this go up against.
Yeah, I think that I'm with you. I don't think the Bengals win this game, only because the defense. I don't think that they are going to be able to eliminate Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill in the way that they need to based off of what we've seen. I'm not worried about the offense being able to keep up, but I still think they got to get some more pieces to keep up with the horses the Chiefs have. But then that puts them into next week, where you can say it would be ideal for the Bengals to win this weekend and not have to worry about next weekend. But I mean, wouldn't it be more fun to watch them go up to Cleveland potentially on Sunday Night Football and clinch the division and make their statement on national TV that the Bengals have arrived?
I think that they would be equally big statements. Again, like, this ties back to what I said at the beginning. All that matters at this point for them in terms of how I'm evaluating the season is whether or not they make the playoffs. You can't underestimate, and I think this is kind of getting lost, how massive an accomplishment that would be for this team this early in their window to make the playoffs. That's kind of like we forget that because we readjusted expectations. The fact that this was a 7-win projected team entering the season, the fact that Burrow was coming off ACL surgery, the fact that Chase was dealing with drops in the preseason. Higgins ended last season injured and was, and still had a chip on his shoulder and a lot to prove this season. The offensive line had the massive chip on their shoulder that they did. The questions on the defensive line and the secondary and who they added and whether or not that would be able to gel and whether or not those were the right guys. Like, the fact that all of that worked out in the Bengals' favor this season, like, the crowning moment would be a playoff berth, however it happens, whether it's this week or next week.
I think that if the Bengals beat the Chiefs this weekend, I think you should start making a case for Zach Taylor to be coach of the year. I know he's up there in the betting odds right now, but if that would, if they were not only able to clinch a playoff spot, but take down the AFC's top team at home, I think that would be a huge accomplishment for Zach Taylor and this franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'll probably have Bill Belichick still up there in the mix. I've been really impressed with how they've turned a team without elite talent into a really strong AFC team. But Taylor's case is this, like, they kind of turned it into a science, developing a young quarterback. Every step, every barrier that they identified that they tried to mitigate and limit to make Burrow's transition as smooth as possible. The fact that it has been as smooth as possible and the fact that they've helped Burrow develop into exactly the quarterback they've hoped it would be in 2020. That's all you could ask for in the modern NFL. I mean, that's why you hire an offensive-minded coach in the first place, to do exactly the kind of, or to help create exactly the kind of progress that the Bengals are getting with Burrow. Again, if they make the playoffs, you're getting exactly what you would have wanted when you took a chance with the young Zach Taylor in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is going to be a fun weekend in Cincinnati for football fans who are fans of the Bearcats and the Bengals. Football all weekend, starting on Friday when the Bearcats take on Alabama. And then you get to cap your weekend off with the Bengals at home versus the Chiefs. It should be a fun one. Well, that's it for Charlie and I. Now I'm going to bring in Jason Hoffman to talk a little bit about this weekend's slate of games. Thanks for tuning in. Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings, and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download USA Today Sports Plus from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus, fan harder. And here's Jason Hoffman. We've got a big week of NFL games this weekend. A lot of teams with playoff implications, Bengals being one. Jason, what do you think about this week's spread?
Real quick, how about the Fighting Houston Texans?
How about the Fighting Houston?
Can we just
David
give
Cullies?
Them a...
Well, and Davis Mills.
Round of applause. Davis Mills with one of the most incredible necks I've ever seen in my lifetime. Yes. Mm-hmm. All credit due to
and
them.
Like the Chargers, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You can't lay an egg.
No.
When you're 100% in the thick
cannot.
Of a playoff hunt
not as
like
a,
that.
Not as a 12.5. It closed at 13 right before kickoff, 13-point favorite.
That and game might keep them out of the playoffs.
It could. Yeah. Very well. Yeah, which is ridiculous. So they are even bigger underdogs this week, okay. Going to the Bay Area, yep. Playing the 49ers, 14.5 points. Hoo boy.
I'm shocked the 49ers got that many points given their quarterback situation with Jimmy G being hurt and Trey Lance and obviously being – he's a rookie and hasn't played much this season.
Jimmy G swears up and down he's going to play with that finger injury.
Yikes.
He can see that starting job going away very quickly if he doesn't. So, listen, I have no reason not to like Houston minus 2 touchdowns mm-hmm. plus. Now – if it went down below 14, I probably wouldn't go there, but screw it.
Right.
This is crazy season. We're playing 17 regular season games this year. Who knows? Houston plus 14.5 at a minus 112. Let's do it.
And for the listeners, I would like to tell you, since you can't see, Jason is feeling a little crazy today because he's sitting across from me in a Clark Griswold crazy Christmas sweater, and I am here for it.
Forgot to wear it last week. Had to bless the office with it. This week. So, yes, thank you. It's one of my favorites.
All right, what else you got this week?
Let's keep it in the NFC. Later game on Sunday. The Arizona, who in the world are they really, Cardinals, going to Dallas mm-hmm. where
they
the UC
good.
Bearcats could mm-hmm. do something special tomorrow.
Yeah. By the way, let's give a shout out to the squad from the Inquirer down in Dallas.
We've got so many people there, yes.
Crushing it for us. Looking forward to all of their coverage. Keith, Albert, Kareem,
Bobby
Sam.
Nightingale.
Kara, Maddie Bobby Mitchell. Nightingale, Maddie Mitchell.
Yes.
Got them all.
And Doc.
And Doc, of course.
Doc flies down, flew down this morning. So, the whole squad's there. So, we're all ready to roll. But yes, Arizona going into Dallas. What is Kyler Murray? What is that offense without DeAndre Hopkins? Can they do anything? They lost to the Lions They lost last week again.
Yes.
Looking just awful coming down the stretch, which has been the knock on Cliff Kingsbury since last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like 5.5 points here. Mm-hmm. I'd like it if it was closer to a touchdown. I'd like it if it was more than a touchdown.
In Dallas's favor?
Dallas is favored by 5.5. So I'm going to stick with the over here, 51.5. It's the highest over-under set of the week. And if you're feeling risque, I'd sprinkle in Dallas -5.5. But I also don't trust Mike McCarthy coach teams in any scenario.
But the Cowboys are the one team in the NFC that I think when they're on, they are all the way on. And I think they're the best. I think they're better than the Packers when they're on.
When they're on, yes.
Yes, but when they're off, they're off.
Yeah, their ceiling is higher, their floor is lower, which is weird. But yeah, I'll probably end up being wrong here, and Dallas will end up running the ball all over the field the whole game and win by like 17-10 or something. But
we'll see.
All right, let's move over to the AFC.
There's a very, very good game this weekend that I had a harder time picking.
There's a couple of very good games. One of them you and Charlie will be at. Yeah. Yes. But I'd like to go to a little, we haven't talked about one of these in a couple weeks, a little bounce back game, a little get right game. For the New England Fighting Patriots up in Foxborough, Gillette, whatever you want to call it, hosting the woe is me, we can't wait for Byron Leftwich to show up and coach our team next year, Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, so you're going with Leftwich as their next head coach.
I mean, Shad Khan has not made the right hire yet anywhere in his organization. I don't know about the rest of his businesses, but as far as the Jaguars go, no. Might as well try, give a guy his first opportunity. I would either go with him or I would go with Eric Bieniemy if I was them. The current trend is not toward defensive minded coaches. Mm-hmm. So I'd go get one of those not so young, but young OCs that promising and see what happens.
Yeah.
And Bruce Arians has been successful everywhere he's been, is Leftwich's mentor, mm-hmm. was the first head coach in the league to be like, yes, anyone who wants to interview any of my guys, I will make sure that they are free to do that because mm-hmm. he doesn't want to deprive them of opportunities. So good vibes all around. That's my guess is Leftwich. But this week, got to take Trevor Lawrence, who, Uncle Rico throwing a football over the mountain. Trevor Lawrence, laying 14.5 at New England. And if Trevor Lawrence has trouble reading what the Jets and the Giants are doing on defense, what is Belichick going to do to him?
How did we all get that one so wrong? I mean, from a prospect standpoint, Trevor Lawrence was
Haven't said he's an NFL quarterback ever.
Huh.
My favorite.
You might be one of the very few people that did.
Correct. My favorite quarterback.
Andrew Luck.
Coming out of college, not named Joe Burrow, in the last 6 years, you know who it was? Dak Prescott. You know why? One thing matters to me when I watch a college quarterback. By the way, everyone out there listening, I do not watch college football as a fan. I hope UC does great things because when they win, we win as an organization. I'm also an alum, full disclaimer. Would love to see great things happen to Coach Fick, Des Ritter, all those guys. They're great humans. But when I watch college football for quarterbacks, I only look for two things. Ball placement. Mm-hmm. And ability to make things happen when crap breaks down.
Yes.
That's it. And I don't even care if you're mobile. Like Joe Burrow, no one's ever going to call him like the next Mike Vick, right?
Right.
But his ability to make things happen when things broke down, even if it was just, and we're seeing it now in the league, a slight movement, a slight shift in the pocket, a slight step up, whatever it is. Trevor Lawrence did none of those things.
Right.
His – now the same knock – same thing can be said for Joe Burrow because Joe Burrow's wide receiver core was ridiculous. Trevor Lawrence did not have good ball placement in college. He had guys who could run out there and go get it, but he did not have good ball placement. And the ball placement that matters the most is the out routes when you're throwing from the other hash. And Trevor Lawrence was very lucky. He had a lot of really good athletes around him. I don't think the guy's an NFL quarterback. At least a starting NFL quarterback.
It's too hard to judge him with the dumpster fire that is in Jacksonville. That too.
It is
him.
It is totally unfair, and that's why I'm saying I think and blah blah blah. I'm not saying for sure. Totally unfair situation. It is a dumpster fire, but yes, at least one year, I look smart, and then when he wins 5 Super Bowls, I'll look like a moron, and I'll own that. Okay. But that's fine. So yeah, New England minus 14.5. This game might be 17-0. Or 12-0. They might not even score enough points. Who knows? With Belichick, he could run the ball 62 times. But yeah, I like that number. It's a minus 112. And I also like the under in that game, 41.5, because I don't think 40 points get scored, let alone 42.
Yeah, I'm going to be with you there. Because right. I don't know what – no, they'll probably have to play for seeding. I was going to say if the Patriots get up, like, do they need to keep all their starters in? So – but yeah, they probably do because of seeding.
Yes.
The postseason. So
they need to, after losing to Buffalo last week, they need to make sure. Yeah,
for sure.
They could be coming here. We'll see.
Could be coming here.
All right. Before we get to Bengals Chiefs, my home dog of the week. Now, everyone out there listening, we did not. We talked about possibly discussing it. We hope that we don't have the same one. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Go first. I have a feeling we have the same one. Based off of what conference you're talking about.
In his final game.
Oh.
In Pittsburgh. The man who has tormented the Cincinnati Bengals his entire career, Ben Roethlisberger, goes into Heinz Field.
Last home game.
And ends the Cleveland Browns playoffs hopes by getting a win outright as a 3.5-point underdog. Throws for a few touchdowns, does a couple of Ben things, also has at least one completely boneheaded interception. Just give me the full Roethlisberger game package.
Yep.
And the Browns ride off into the sunset with the decision of whether or not to pay Baker Mayfield.
I think, well, we have the same one. Because I think that there is no way that the rest of the Steelers team doesn't play their butts off this game and absolutely dominate the Browns. And I feel like I pick the freaking Steelers to be the home dog every week. It really feels like that because I picked them with the Titans.
Well, and this has been a weird season because they've been underdogs so much. We're not used to this.
Exactly.
So when you look at it, your brain's like, wait a minute, Pittsburgh's not an underdog here.
So I definitely picked them. But the game that I wanted to talk about with you that we skipped over – also, the other home dog that I had that was potential upset, but then they just looked so bad against the Cowboys, was the Washington football team at home versus the Eagles.
Sideline fights. I like sideline fights.
I did agree with what they said following the game where it's like, he's my brother. Do you fight with your brother? It's like, yeah. You know?
They played in college together. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But this is a game to me where I feel like I wouldn't be shocked if the Washington football team won this game because I still think at some point Jalen Hurts is going to revert to Jalen Hurts that we've seen, and I don't know if he's the necessary future for the Eagles, but the Eagles have been playing better. But I don't know. For whatever reason, Washington football team just kind of sticks around. I mean, they beat the Bucs, so that was a potential home dog option for me. But the one that I wanted to talk to you about is the Dolphins at Titans game. This one was a tough one for me to pick because I know that Tennessee is playing really well and, you know, they're obviously one of the AFC favorites, but the Dolphins are hot right now. And so even though it's in Tennessee, but can't you see that being in an upset game?
No.
Okay. Well, you haven't been high on the Dolphins all season long, so why am I expecting anything different?
In the fight game, whether it's mixed martial arts, Muay Thai, boxing, whatever, there's a saying. Step up in class. The New Orleans Saints should not have been forced to play Monday night
Unbelievable.
They had a dude who was like probably
me at right tackle.
And that defense was nothing. So Tua is stepping up in class this week against a Titans defense that is going to force him to throw the ball down the field, which he cannot do accurately, at least, or on a line or on a rope. I think the game gets ugly. I think it won't be pretty, but I there's no way I see the Titans losing to the Dolphins. Okay. Well. Their historic start out 0-7, then go 7-0 streak, I think, ends this week.
Well, we'll see. But I know you got to go, so give us your thoughts on the Bengals-Chiefs game before you head out. Love
it. So excited. We've talked about it all year.
You shocked that the Bengals are getting 5?
5.5 right now. Wow. I love it.
Change from when
I love 5.5. Mm-hmm. I like anything over 3. I'll take 3.5. I like the Chiefs to win outright. Just because when there's 47 seconds or a minute, whatever, there's no place on the field that Patrick Mahomes can't get you into field goal range.
Right.
That being said, Joe Burrow has looked special ever since that fourth quarter. Had to have it against the 49ers. Mm-hmm. Broncos game, whatever.
That Broncos last have a really week, good defense.
Yeah, that was a really good defense. Last week was really special. Ball placement, decision, hitting guys, like it, play calling even last week was. Now, granted, that was against, some people have said, the JV squad for the Ravens. But
win's
I like,
win.
I've been saying it all year. I've been waiting for it. Shootout City. It's going to be cold, yes, but it will not be raining here.
I don't think it's going to be that cold. I thought last time I looked, it was being in the 50s.
No, 50s on Saturday with rain.
Oh.
Sunday's like high of 36, 37.
Okay.
Chilly willy, but no rain. Look, I like the over of 50.5 in this game. If you were to say I have to absolutely pick something, I would go Bengals plus 5.5, which is a minus 112. But if you're out there and you're like, man, I really think the Bengals are going to win this game, you can get good money on it, plus 180, bet 100, win 180. But yeah, my pick, even though it's not good on the money side, it's a minus 115. It's over 50.5. That being said, watch Joe Mixon and whoever the Chiefs are going to have running the ball. Just run it up and down all day, and it's like 32-point game.
I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see.
All right. And as always, I'd like to remind everybody these lines are brought to you by Tipico Sportsbook. Tipico is a partner of Gannett Company, Inc., our parent company, and Gannett does make money off of that partnership. So please make sure that you don't take any of this conversation as serious gambling advice. It's just for fun. And if you or anyone else out there that you know has a problem with gambling, please contact 1-800-GAMBLER. We'll see you all in the new year.